I think anybody here that knows Amara is a big fan of Amara. She's an amazing woman. She's got an amazing story, an amazing business. There's churros and empanadas, and I'd be surprised if there's still any left by now. But I'm very excited to have her come and speak. So Amara, welcome to the stage.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, everybody. I can't believe the room is so full. I have this idea that it was going to be just a couple people. And when I emailed Mike and he said, well, there are 90-something people coming. And I'm like, oh, my God, what did I get into? But I'm really excited and honored to be here today. Honestly, this is such a beautiful community. And finding out that all of you come to these Friday coffee meetups is so exciting. I'll be joining very soon, more often. But yeah, so today, what I want to do is share my story with you. And along with it, some of the things I learned by being in business for 7 years. And yeah, I've been just down the street here on Raymond in Old Town Pasadena. And we have a story of chocolate. That's how I like to call it. We have a lot of bitters and sweet moments, but really good all around. And so that's sort of like what I want to show you. And hopefully, you know, people like our friend here, what was your name? Lorena, that sort of like myself had to reinvent yourself at some point of your life and do something different. And possibly with a completely different background, end up with something really good that you're happy about and that you wake up every morning really happy and excited to do. And that's the reason why my talk today, it's called Amara's Secret Sauce to Stay Inspired and Passionate in Business. Why did I choose this topic? Two things. First of all, people are fascinated with secret stuff. I don't know why. Food-wise, I mean, it's like secret stuff, secret menu, whatever. There's no secret in the kitchen. There's just a recipe. And if somebody doesn't want to share it with you, shame on them. I'll share mine with you today. So, sorry. Didn't notice. Hopefully this thing is working. And so, yeah, so today we're going to talk about that. And I've been in business for 7 years, I said. And again, I think many of the business owners I know, including you, right, we struggle with all of these different things that happen every day. Mike knows about it. Everybody knows about it. It's like you have an employee that has an issue. There's, the health department inspected you and you have to correct something within 24 hours. If you are in the restaurant business, that's very stressful. And so when you start your business, you have all of this passion and all of this inspiration and these beautiful ideas. You're like, yes, I want to do this. When the years pass by, you start like dragging yourself down. You're like all tired. And you're like, how do I connect back to that passion from the beginning and make it happen every single day? And with that attitude, face all of the problems that usual businesses faces. So you get to know me a little bit better, because I know some of you know me, but some of you don't know about me. There are many things happening in my life. And this part, it's going to take you back to 10 years prior of being in the States, when I was back in Venezuela, where I am originally from. And this is going to feel like that 10-year challenge you see in social media. Everybody's posting that. I'm not one of them, so be merciful on me, please. So this is me right here, about 10 years ago. And as you can see, I'm holding a mic, and I wasn't doing something like this. I was actually working in media in Venezuela. Some of you know I went to a beauty pageant. It's a big thing in Venezuela. Don't judge me. I was 17 years old. I wore a really tiny swimsuit, and I did it. And that opened a world of opportunities for working on TV. I didn't want to cry on telenovelas. That was not my thing. I was always inclined to writing and fascinated by what press does, I mean, what journalism is. And at the same time, I was attending engineering school. I'm a chemical engineer by train. So I was literally building two careers at the same time. And it was beautiful. I lived in a city that was sort of like LA, really diverse, full of immigrants from different parts of the world. And that gave me the opportunity to dream about something that was part of my family, like wonderful recipes. My grandma was a cook, and she, for many, many years, found pleasure in giving food to people and feeding people's soul throughout food. So, yeah, those were good times. But at the same time, in Venezuela, there were things happening. And I don't want to talk about this a lot because 2 years ago, I did a beautiful tech talk. I had the opportunity to do that here in Pasadena. And there's more information on that. But as you might heard in the press, there's a lot going on in Venezuela. And for the last 18 years, literally your country touched bottom. And the life of many Venezuelans, including myself, changed it completely. Our security was at stake. The possibility of continue doing what you did was really tough, especially for me being in media and being in as a journalist. We were persecuted if you were saying the truth or trying to show something that was not the government's vision. And so at some point when that happened, I decided that I wanted to do to come over to the States and study and pursue a graduate degree. I went to UCLA. I'm a Bruin. Yay! Sorry, USC people. Love you, Heather. but anyways, I never thought that that was going to be an opportunity that was going to come as a way to flee Venezuela. And so after I finished my degree, I couldn't go back to Venezuela, and that wasn't an option for me. And so I still had this beautiful dream of having Amaras, and I said, well, location have changed, but passion hasn't, right? And so I said, let's do this. And with all that enthusiasm, I faced this big wall of not knowing how to run a business in a foreign country where business culture is completely different from what we do in Venezuela, where I had zero network. I knew nobody. Nobody. I only knew my sister-in-law, that was my only family, and a couple of my friends. You, Clarissa, I know you've been with me since I came here. But yeah, maybe my network was 5 people or 10. That was it. And so trying to figure out how to navigate the business environment within that situation was really hard on my own. And so from the beginning of my business, the two biggest takes that I have is listen, observe, ask questions, and learn. Why? Because when you're all excited and you have all of these ideas, you want to communicate them, especially if you're with me, like me, somebody who likes to talk to people, you want to say it all, share it all. But then what do you get when you connect with others? And so I was one day at a walk in the beach in the Manhattan Beach Pier. And there's this guy fishing. And so we start talking about the weather, as everybody does in LA, right? And the guy says, I've been in business for all of these years and I have set up several businesses. And when I started, I always reach free resources and they were so amazing and so key. I never paid anybody to be a consultant. And they are all available for you. And so I literally got two really good things out of a simple meeting with a stranger. It's listen, observe, ask the right questions and learn. And find the free resources within your city. It will help you build community. It will help you grow your network. And honestly, you go into the website of the SBA, for example, you'll find all kinds of seminars online, in presence, everything. So use that. So sometimes people tell me, like, I don't have enough money. And, you know, how do I pay a coach or something? I mean, I'm not against that. That's wonderful. But there's all of this. So I reached out to the Chamber of Commerce, the city of Pasadena, and I started building a network throughout. When I opened the doors of my business, well, or almost ready to open the doors, I spent all of this money building up the foundations of a business from the ground zero. And when I get to that point, I realized that this beautiful big project that I had with chocolate, coffee, arepas, which is a Venezuelan beautiful bread, empanadas, all of that, was cachapas, yeah, chocolate, everything, wasn't going to actually materialize that easy because I ran out of money during construction and I couldn't really buy an oven and a griddle, and a bunch of things that I didn't think was going to cost me that much. And so that part is I just want to share this picture with you because on this side, this is what I decided to do. And this is sort of what we do right now. We started with a menu that was a quarter of the menu that we serve today. Basically, I had to scale down that really big dream in order to make it happen. And that's what led us to that big take on that part of my business experience and that I call the growth. Ambition and dreaming big is key for growth, but keeping your plan challenging but manageable economically, personally, spiritually, call it as you want, in plan stages with realistic goals leads to better results. So I picked what I thought made me unique and nobody else was doing in Old Town or even in LA. I said, from all of these products and ideas and things that I have, what can I bring to Pasadena that will keep people coming for that and we'll hook them up? And then later on, we can say, hey, now we have this. And that came down to churros, chocolate, and coffee. And I have to say that I found a really amazing partnership with Jones Coffee. I'm really grateful to them. Chuck Jones was one of the first people that sat me down and said, Amara, you have an engineering degree. You have an MBA. Why the heck do you want to go work at a cafe and spend all your money on that? And I'm like, because I dream of it. And he's like, okay, come work with me and see if you like that. I'm like, okay. And he trained me and I fueled my passion even more by doing that. I didn't mind all of the things you got to do in order to run a business. And so, yeah, I think that's really, really important. And during that time, I only had 3 employees and I got to cover a full day of work and then go back home and continue working. And so that's why I'm saying this is so important, because you are so drained sometimes. You work 18 hours a day and you still got to get next day back there. And sometimes you open your doors and nobody walks in. That's how it is at the beginning. And many of you can relate to that. And so when I was interacting with my employees, my biggest take, I mean, being that close, those many hours, was you need to give them systems that they can follow, things that work for them, considering their background and everything, in order to achieve consistency. So their personality and what they want to do and their craft is there. But consistently, you can get the same results. And also that would allow you to set up a workflow later on that other employees will follow easily. And so this is a really fun picture, because we're going to talk about now what happened after you do that. And it's creating a company culture that people feel proud about. And that makes also people want to come work for you. Because in my case, and for many people in this industry, in the restaurant industry, one of the most difficult things we face is hiring people and high turnaround. So for me, dealing with that was... I mean, where I dealt with that was creating a company culture that people wanted to join. And so right here, this is a picture of December. Like I said, this past December, like I said, I started with 3 employees, and now we have 10. And these people work their hearts off every day. They do it with passion. When you get to Amara's, you get greeted with a smile. Sometimes they're full of work and they want to make it happen for you and they want to see you again. And that led to our customers and our people that visit us every day. And it's so wonderful to see people that visit Pasadena every year or often, and they sometimes, you know, move out or they're really far and they just keep coming back and say, hey, you know, I came here 5 years ago and I have to make it back to Pasadena when I'm in LA. And that's something we feel really proud about. And that's because of my employees. They make it happen. I'm not there all the time. Many of you complain that I'm never there. You think I'm not working and I'm on a vacation trip or something. And no, I am working, but they are doing it. And that's important, because that is going to allow us in the future, that's how I envision my company, to hopefully replicate that model into other Amaras that people can enjoy in other parts of the city. So yeah, our company culture is based off of service, community, and family. And I try to tell them, most of them, I've always think of my employees, or I love when my employees live close to Pasadena or they live in Pasadena. I know it's really hard. This is very expensive. But trust me, there are people who live in this city and they want to work in this city. And I always tell them, you got to feel proud of what you do. And when you walk on the street and you say, I work at Amara's, and people go, yeah, I've been there and I love their empanadas and their churros, they feel good. So when they are at work and they are maybe underperforming, I call them back and I say, hey, remember? And so they recalibrate their attitude and go back to the workplace with a different face. Reinvest in your business. After the years pass, then you start looking a little outdated. Like when you marry your better half, and like me, and you have all of these years of marriage, then you look at each other and then you're like, there's something different on you. Yeah, I cut it my hair. Or, you know, I got new clothing. Well, it's the same with businesses. You have to reinvest your money back. And sometimes people get cheap because you don't get a lot of money from it sometimes. You know, they're tough times. And sometimes you're like, yeah, I'm just getting this little money. Maybe I can save it. Maybe. No, just put it, fuel it back in the business. That will give you a result back. Sometimes people are scared of investing in technology, investing in people, which I think is the most difficult part. And that's something that is going to lead you to success. We try to beautify our place from once in a while. So you walk in and, oh, there's a new couch, or painting is looking fresh and new. That's important. And I hope that my customers see that and appreciate that. And invest in your customers. I will never forget when I was doing my MBA, this lesson in which a professor said, I don't remember the numbers, but he said, it's way cheaper to invest money in your customers, the people that already are in your door, rather than trying to spend money in new people. I'm not saying growing your market or growing your brand and reaching out to more people is not important and you shouldn't spend money on it. But put a lot of energy into that people that come. They're going to be the evangelists of your brand and of what you do. And so sometimes, you know, like if you're at Amara's and you tried all of these things and I'm there, or my employees, and I give them this green card for saying, I mean, like this open envelope for them to fill it in, to reach out to their customers and say, do you want to try this new product? Or you always order the same. Do you want to try this? And we get you to see a different side of Amara's that you haven't experienced. So I'm investing in you and I'm investing in my brand and in my future. And that's something that I think it's really important. Consider that. And well, so a little recap. Listen, observe, ask questions, and learn. Use free resources available to grow or start your business. Dream big, but keep your goals realistic. Develop systems for proper workflow and consistent results and products. Build employee trust and collaboration. Reinvest in your business and your customers. And like I said, the sweet part is for the end. The secret sauce for me, or the Amara secret sauce, to continue staying passionate, inspired, moving forward in business, is basically passion is fueled by purpose. But it's not just the purpose of running a business and making money. That's a consequence of that purpose. It's a commitment to your vision and the ultimate higher purpose that your business serves. And it's so hard to dig in and find that. You know, when you sit down with a consultant and you do branding or something and they say, what is your vision? And you go like, oh, I haven't written that. You know, and you got to start thinking of it not as a phrase that you want to hang on your wall. Maybe you want to do that. But something that truly gets you passionate and gets you like, yes, I want to do this after 7 years, after having a lawsuit with an employee, after, you know, yes. So if you feel that phrase you wrote back 7 years back, and you read that today and that doesn't ignite your passion, you got to rework that phrase. You got to find that. And in my case, I've been working on my phrase for a while. I always put things in and take things out. And I want to read that part just because my second language and my memory tricks me. I don't want this part to get lost. This is a little short, like this. To find that resilience to overcome the difficulties, you have to constantly renew your commitment to your vision and the ultimate higher purpose that your business serves. Who do we do it for? Why we do this? In my case, that higher purpose is I have a mission to preserve my country's culinary and social identity that is at risk of being lost under the current political chaos. For me, it's key to share throughout my business the social and spiritual values that means to be Venezuelan, because our country is on the verge of losing that after 20 years of horrible politics. So this is something very personal for me. Why? Because everything you see in media with the word Venezuela, if you type Venezuelan news, you'll see war. You'll see all of this corruption and things going on. And we Venezuelans, we're not like that. We're really hardworking people. We have a culture of welcoming others. We know you right now, and you're going to be my family, my friend, everything. And I'm going to give you the best of me. And I want my business to reflect that and to continue that company culture to be part of my employees, for them to grasp it and to show it to you as a client every time you show up at Amara's and eat an empanada. So that for me is really personal and important. Also, because I love Pasadena and I'm in love with this city that gave me the opportunity to be here. And as much as it's going on right now in this country, I know, and I appreciate you being here. I think the majority of people are welcoming. They want to do good things. They want change. And my business being here and being successful is a proof that people love immigrants who make America the country that it is, with its black and white and gray and yellow and everything. And so, because I'm in love with Pasadena and this city, I want to continue building something that brings pride to my community. That is something that businesses like Porto's or like Sanco Chicken or like In-N-Out, when you name them, they scream LA. They scream, and locally here, you say Julia Child. Besides being a wonderful person, she is a brand, and she is tied to Pasadena, like the City Hall, or like Julianne's, or like El Portal, or like Lucky Boys. I mean, I know some of these business owners, and most of you probably have visited these businesses, and you continue to see them around, and they're part of the identity of the city. And so I find that really inspiring, and I hope that one day Amara's is the same for people. People feel the same way. And so I wanted to close with this phrase. Nothing good in our lives has come from thinking small. All the breakthroughs, every single one of them, have come as a result of dreaming big and nurturing those dreams to reality. So go ahead, dream big, face all of those walls, break them, but do it every day. Doesn't matter if you have 1 or 2 or 10 or 15 years in business. If you do restaurant or you do technology or if you do immigration or if you do, it doesn't matter. Just go back to that drawing board, to that first day, to that passion, reconnect with it. Just do it. And so thank you guys for coming. And if you haven't been to Amara's, I hope you can come sometime soon and experience firsthand some of what we do. And thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Amara. That was great. So we're very, very happy to have you in town. And I love your chocolate and your sandwiches and your churros and everything. So we're going to open up to Q&A. Now is a great time to ask about Amara's business, the innovation she's doing, the things she's doing. Not a great time to ask when she's going to be in at Amara, so you can visit and talk to her.
I can share my schedule later on.
Yeah. So here's John.
Okay, got a few questions already. Here we go.
Thank you.
with your training in engineering, and you did talk about trying to set up systems and also trying to reinvest in the business and things like that. I was just wondering how you feel that, that engineering training has impacted your approach to your small business, and also, you know, just specifically how it impacted. Yeah,
definitely. Thank you. A lot, actually. In engineering, specifically what I went to school for, one of the key things was optimization. So optimization of processes basis its knowledge and its core values in making a process being efficient, repeatedly efficient, and then also make it profitable. And so definitely, I always like to think that my engineering background has had a great impact in my business. And I think it does in anybody's businesses. Like if you're doing something different from what you used to do before, even if it's a career or something, whatever you did prior to that, it's going to make you take a specific approach towards that that will give you like great results in a different way than somebody else who have been doing something different would have. So just grab your bag of tricks and look in there, and that will help you overcome the difficulties or improve your business towards what you want. And in my case, honestly, those days when I was doing my little flow charts, and they are not gone. I still do that, and we still review recipes, and we still review calibration of equipment. Many people don't think that in the kitchen you need to check your equipment and see how it's working and weight your stuff and be accountable. And how you do it, you implement systems, and definitely that comes from that engineering background. Yeah, definitely. I hope that answers your question. Yeah.
So that was fantastic, and you have my very, very sincere admiration. So I have a small technical question. So you mentioned that you ran out of money when you opened. And so, you know, when you're in the early stages of a business, you can either have debt/credit, other people's money, or savings. And what did you run out of, and how did you deal with it?
Good question. Actually, I had savings. That's all I had. And the particulars of my story is that because I am an immigrant and I was new in this country, sometimes you can go to the SBA and apply for loans and they will give you a loan. I mean, you can go to a bank and get a loan. I had no credit history, so I couldn't do that. I didn't have that card under my sleeve. So I had my savings. I sold a property that I had in Venezuela that was my family home. And part of that money, I used to start my business. So I had all in. I couldn't make this fail. I had to make it happen. And so when I did that, I did look for opportunities to get, you know, a loan or something. Didn't happen. So when I saw that I was running out of money, I was like, oh, this little bit of cash, you got to use it wisely. And that's when I decided to scale down my project and say, I can do it with this. I can start with this. And if this works, great. We can reinvest part of that money back into the business. Otherwise, I won't have lost it all. Probably, yes. But, you know, I felt that way at the moment. So, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
A quick background before my question, and it's just to give credit to the fact that Amara is very talented at something that I think will play into everyone's business. And that is that each human being wants to be heard and acknowledged and seen. And regardless of the business, she exemplifies that. And I was just a customer off the street that had walked in and tasted her cacao, and I think it got me pregnant. but I kept... regardless, kept coming back. And she was the type of business owner that she would recognize me and she would notice me. And it felt like I was a part of something, a little cheers, you know, hey, Norm, I felt like I was a part of something. And it was very special. So I think regardless of your business, that is part of your secret sauce. And secondly, it led to a deeper relationship and then a conversation and then an invitation to have her do her TED Talk, which I recommend everyone go watch because it brings more context to what she is sharing here. My question, beyond all that praise, is I find it fascinating your comments about investing in your employees. And as someone who works with, you know, 50 to 90 different personalities, it's a soup of chaos sometimes. It's very hard, all those different personalities. And I know from you that you really do put your money where your mouth is, and you do some very unique things within the small context of your business and the constraints of your amounts of money, et cetera, to cultivate that. So if you could speak to that and the types of rewards you do and how you invest in them.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you. Definitely. Yes. That particular strategy has led us to have a family. And like I said, that's part of our company culture. And I like to call them like pizza nights or something like that. So basically, we try to gather every quarter when we are also like if we have a new menu or something coming up. But even if we don't have any specifics to talk about, it's a time to bond and to reconnect with our employees in a good mood, right? But then we also do a review of what things need to be improved. And we collaborate into understanding how we can make this happen. Why? Because at the beginning, I was dealing with all of that myself. And so I was doing social media. I was dealing with employee issues. I was trying to develop a new menu. So everything fell on my shoulders. And I said, I mean, these people might know what to do. Why don't I ask them? And sometimes business owners are afraid of passing the ball to their employees to a point where they actually bring something back and collaborate. And that's really, really important. And then the other thing is sometimes a specific thing happens. And especially when you're in a high-paced environment like a restaurant, I don't know, there was an incident with a customer or something, you want to jump in the moment and tell them something. Like, hey, you can't do that, right? Not the best. It hasn't brought me anything. So when that happens, I sit down in my house with a cold head and I write down a little letter to them. It's not necessarily, I'm not going to pay you tips, or which you can do. But I mean, you are not sanctioning them. You are telling them how you feel about that issue. And then you sit down, you give them that, and then you sit down together at some point. Sometimes it's a 5-minute break. And then we talk face to face. And so I understand what happened to you. And you understand how I feel about it. And that resolves issues easily. I mean, not easily, but in a way that makes a long-lasting relationship.
The rewards that you provide, I think, is...
One of the things that I noticed, too, especially for small businesses, if you own a business that is under 20 employees, you're fighting in the real world with larger corporations, like, next to each other. Why? For example, it's not a secret that if you're hiring an employee, like, you pay a little less when you are under, I think, 20. I'm horrible with remembering numbers, but I think like if you're under 20 employees, how many? 25. Your minimum wage is, let's say, I don't know, $12.50. And then if you're over that, it's like $13.50 or a dollar more or something. What happens is if a kid wanna go work for, let's say, Blaze Pizza will give them the higher rate and usually give them less hours and all of that. But they think they're being paid more, so they want to be there. And if you offer them as a small business your rate, they'll say, why am I going to come work for you? So I usually try to make it to that, you know, corporation standard, which is really hard for a small business. And then try to, for example, we know that here in Pasadena, one of the challenges is parking. I pay for parking. I have a big amount of spaces down the street that I had to, like, over the years try to get, and I pay for them like $80 for every employee every month. But they know that's a benefit. They can just go in that garage and be in 5 minutes at their job. So I can let you be late. because I pay for parking, you know? Or we do bonuses. I mean, so every year, like, we had a lot of work on December, and most of the restaurant employees, they clock out at 5 p.m. If that's your shift, you're gone. My employees don't do that. They're not looking at the clock to leave. They are like, what else do we have to do? Do we have to prepare something for tomorrow? And yeah, I still will pay them the hour, but they're willing to complete their job, to do their things, because also we give them a performance bonus. So there's a monetary compensation, but I guess, or I think that the biggest take on that is that they know you recognize their effort and their work, and in some way, you're going to give it back to them. When they need time off, I know that's really hard to handle, especially when you have a business where people have to work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Those are your big money-making days. Everybody wants to be with family. Most of my employees have children. So how do you negotiate that? Well, I try to tell them, well, within this boundaries, you can play. You can talk to another employee and try to change your shift if you gotta go do something. I can come and work for you and, I don't know, like be in front of the fryer or make arepas or whatever, that maybe I had something else planned, but I'll go and do it for you so you can go and be with your kid in specific, you know, special event. So those are the sacrifices you do, but it gives you also a lot of satisfaction. So I treat them as a family. So, yeah.
There's a question up here.
Hi, Mara. Big fan.
Thank you.
Yes. I had wondered, as a restaurateur, I had found you on Yelp, and that's part of big part of social media. And could you speak or tell us a story about how you've dealt with that over the years?
Well, here's the thing. Social media, you got to take it with a pinch of salt, literally. I think, as I was saying, I try to invest in my customers, and that's part of it. Sometimes somebody walks in the door, you don't know if they're a Yelp elite, because there's such a thing if you don't know it. These are, he's one. Hi. So, yeah, I mean, and so these people, I mean, not everybody is the same. They're people who, they just come and enjoy their food and they want to share their experience with the world. But remember, each of us has a different vision of the same situation. We all see it differently. We use our backgrounds, how we were emotionally that day. So there are people who say beautiful things about you and about your business and about your food, and maybe somebody else won't. And when you see like negative comments or something, for example, I always handle them. Like, most people don't want to face them. I just go and respond. I take a deep breath and I say, hey, why don't you come back and try it? I mean, sometimes you can manage that, but that's one of the things. I didn't have money to bring influencers and pay them money to come and have lavish dinners. Many restaurants, if you don't know, they do that. When they open their businesses, they invite a bunch of people who have tons of followers, and then all of these people go on social media, and then it explodes, right? I didn't have that money. When I started also, Yelp was really strong, but like Instagram and all of that wasn't that big, especially for restaurants, or at least I didn't know how to manage it. And my approach was basically, and with my employees, try to get people to tell you that they like their food when they are there. So I always tell my employees, when you see somebody is finishing and you're picking up the plates, how it went. Because if something went wrong, you can fix it right there. If you try to fix it when the person is gone and wrote a review, you're screwed. And again, they become your evangelists. That's how I like to see it. You know, they want to go and tell others, this place is amazing, you should go. So that was basically my social media strategy, honestly. And stick to quality and try to bring new fun things, because people want to try things that are fun. And then you have your core dishes and your core menu, but just try to offer them those fun things that they can talk about.
Over here.
Yep. First of all, I just want to give you some compliments. You got a lot of courage. I think anybody in this room would, you know, give you credit for that. You know,
thank you.
I think the word is cojones. But anyway,
I like that.
No, I mean, you know, immigrant, coffee. My God, you know, coffee is all over the place in this country, in this town. If anybody's ever seen the movie, it's called 100-Foot Journey. Anybody? Seen it?
No, not yet.
About an established restaurant in France, and this Indian family comes in and opens up another restaurant across the street. Fortunately, they were different kind of restaurants, different kind of, you know, menu and so forth, but there were two restaurants across the street. A battle ensues. I'm wondering about, I was just looking at you up on Yelp.
Oops.
And you have a competition across the street, you know, Copa Vida, also a popular place. I'm wondering, like, what is the relationship, you know, going on between these two businesses selling the same product? You know, the Indian, the French, and the movie, that's one thing, but coffee, you know. Yeah. How do you, so you must wake up with angst, like, every day. It's like, how am I going to differentiate myself? I hear, like, one of the secrets for Starbucks is they're not selling coffee, they're selling a destination, they're selling an experience. So I'm sure this is what you're thinking about, you know, all the time. Anyway, just the challenges of any business, you know, how to differentiate yourself in a crowded market.
Thank you for that question, actually. Yes, not only with Copa Vida, but with other businesses. Copa Vida opened after we did. And for me, as a small business owner, it was really frustrating that many more people knew where Copa Vida was, or they would say Amara's is across the street from Copa Vida at some point. It hurts, you know, because you are pushing up the hill all of this weight, and you make it to a point, you create a destination for people to go get coffee. Because down on Raymond, if you remember 7 years ago, we had Stats, right? And we had the travel store, but there was not a lot going on Raymond on that side of the street. So not many people walked to Raymond. And I don't want to say we did all the lift work, but in certain way, we establish that location for a place for coffee and breakfast. And so then they just come across the street. I think they run a great business. I didn't have $1 million to start my business. They are a larger business. And you can find that. I mean, they have opened maybe 5 locations within the last 5 years. I only have mine. So how I see it, yeah, definitely when I knew they were going to do coffee, my legs started trembling. I'm like, oh my God. And I said, exactly that. How do I differentiate myself? And I failed. I'm not saying this is their company culture at all. I think they do a great job. But I felt that in LA, the company, the coffee culture was growing. But in some cases, when people wanted to say they were doing coffee right, there was an attitude of you need to be a coffee expert to enjoy this. And that wasn't my approach. My approach was, come over, we'll see what you like, we'll make you your favorite coffee every morning, maybe we'll make you try something different. And this is our environment. I mean, you're part of our family. And this amazing chocolate that we mix with coffee, you can't find it anywhere else. So I trusted, bless you, I trusted my brand, I trusted my work. And actually having that place across the street pushed me to be better, to do certain things in my menu that I didn't consider before. And that's how I see every single other restaurant that opens, and I feel it's a competition in a certain way for me. It's a motivation to go back to the drawing board and say, how can I be better? How can I stay current? How can I make people continue coming to Amara's? And that's exactly how I approach having Copa Vida, as many other businesses. Even sometimes when you're in the lunch business, I remember when that pizzeria in the corner, huge, beautiful, 30-something degrees or something, opened. And I was like, oh, my God, everybody's going to get pizza for $8. They're not going to come to Amara's to get an arepa for $10. That's how I felt. But no, see, people continue to come to Amara's for their food, pizza they can get anywhere. That business, unfortunately, is out of business. I don't like to see that with any business. It doesn't mean a win for me. But it was a win because I sat down and I said, I have to do a lunch special. I have to do this. So, yeah, motivation.
Thanks, Amara. It's a great story. A question for you. So we have a couple of very successful restaurant food businesses that were started in Pasadena. One was Panda Express, and they're doing a lot of money. We also had Elise Wetzel and her husband come speak at Friday Coffee Meetup, and they started Blaze Pizza. And so I'm glad that we have you up on the stage, because I can see in a few years there's going to be probably Amara's on every block. No, but that's a question. Is what is your future plans for Amara? You talked a little bit about creating systems and this constant improvement and all that. I'm sure you're probably maybe thinking about opening up another location, maybe even have had people approach you and say, you know what, I really like your concept, I'd like to invest in you. Can you talk a little bit about that and what your future plans are for your business?
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. You always dream big and you oversee your business going many places. To be honest with you, I don't see Amara's as a Blaze Pizza, for example. I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but I feel we're more of a business where people have an experience. And for example, and I always like to do this, I'm not saying maybe you don't like that business, but for example, I see Portos. And I see Portos as a great example of a business I would like to follow. Portos, I know some of the owners, some of the family owners, actually the daughter of the lady who created Portos. And Portos took almost, I don't know right now how many years they have been in business, but it's been sort of like 30 or around there. And it's the second generation who actually helped open all the other businesses. I'm not saying I'm going to wait for my daughter here in the belly to run my business, right? But eventually, how I see it is I oversee my business having maybe less locations, something more, you know, in communities that we know we want to be in, that have sort of the same characteristics as Pasadena, where you live, work, and there's a sense of community. I think that's something special that has this city and that made me pick Pasadena over other locations. I would scout for that and build a business over there and build a community. So I oversee my business doing that more than something like, for example, Blaze Pizza. I'm not saying if somebody comes with a bag of $1 million, I would say no, but but I've never thought about that. And also, I had the opportunity to recently work with the people at Eco Factory with a rebranding process in our image. And I'm looking forward to grow my business online. Currently, we sell our Venezuelan hot chocolate, that dark, rich, amazing, organic chocolate. We sell it through Amazon. And that business in the last 2 years have grown 200%. And so I understood that investing money on that and making those products that I can sell online grow was a way to take Amara's to people who are now out of Pasadena. Everybody's also online shopping. You don't want to go anywhere. You just got to hit your Amazon or whatever other button and just get your stuff at home. So I am developing a line of products that are going to be available online. And that's a whole different new line of business that requires effort, money, and that I have to grow into something productive. So those are the future plans. They're more immediate plans. But yeah, like I said, I would love to be a reference for Venezuelan food in Pasadena and in Los Angeles at some point, hopefully, yeah. No, thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Amara. Stay up here.